Well, yeah. It's 6 o'clock here, Thursday evening, February 25th. We're going to call the Administrative Control Board for the Mountain Region Water Special Service District to order. Do we have any public input or any guests? I don't think so. Okay.
No public.
That takes us to, do we need to go into an executive session tonight?
Nope, no executive tonight, Mike. I was just going to start real quickly and just let people know that Leo Williams retired today. His official last day is Sunday. But Leo's worked in public service for 44 years.
Wow.
And was with Mountain Regional for roughly 20, nearly the entire time the district's been formed. So I just wanted to thank Leo for his service.
Yeah. That's good. That's.
What are his plans, Scott?
You know, I think just enjoying himself. He's got a fifth wheel trailer, and he enjoys using his side-by-side. And he's got some car projects at home, and he's also into shooting, skeet shooting, things like that. So I think a mixture of all those things.
But he's staying close by in case we've got an emergency phone call.
Yep, he said today, call him anytime.
Good, that's awesome.
Yep.
Okay, so item 3, the consent agenda. Do we have any comments on the minutes from the January 21st meeting? Okay, I don't hear any there. The check register, do we have any comments on that? Karen, did you have a look at that?
I had a couple of questions.
You bet.
Okay, so what is Century Equipment for $9,900? It's a lease.
That's the lease for the new backhoe for 2021. So $9,900 is for the whole year.
Okay. And then what are we leasing through Zions Bank for $10,000?
That is actually, we have two leases through Zions Bank. One is for, it's called a lease, but it's the property we purchased by Lost Canyon, that we use as an office for Brandon and Kim. And the other lease is for the three diesel generators that were installed down at Lost Canyon as backup. So one is 2014, one is 2017, I think the property is the 2014 and the generators is the 2017 lease.
Okay. And then my third question was, I know I've asked this before, but how much do we contribute to HSA's monthly per employee?
We don't do amount per monthly. At the beginning of the year, we front load their HSAs. If it's a family plan, it's $2,500. If it's a couple, I think it's $1,250. Lisa, is there any other criteria? Are those the only two breakdowns?
You have it right.
Okay.
This is Joel. Question about the $9,900. Is that unusual for us to go once a year versus twice a year versus three or four times a year? I'm just curious.
We usually just do it once a year. We do that through, that's kind of been the pattern.
I mean, I'm sorry to take up so much time, but is that okay? I mean, should we look at doing more than once a year? Or are we happy and fed down the way it is?
We can look into it. I don't know if they would charge us more if we spread out payments on a monthly basis or whether it's just better to pay it all up front.
Yeah, I mean, I'll leave it up to you guys. I was just asking the question.
Okay.
We've got a few.
I'll check into it a little bit, yeah. If we can hold on to the money, why not, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather see us hold the money than them.
Yeah.
We've got a few pieces of equipment, Joel, that we lease, so you'll see these come up from time to time.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Scott.
Hey, do we have any other questions on the check register?
Mike, I have one that's on the Leaf and Teresa. I think it's Severson overpayment refund at $4,700. Is there anything noteworthy about that? It seems to be quite a bit larger than.
Yeah, they're a large customer up in the colony, and their bills averaged about $2,500 a month. They sold the house. They hadn't paid their bill for 2 months. So we sent in to the tile company to collect their past due bill or their utility bill. So the tile company collected it, but then they also went online and paid it like the day before closing. And so we collected it through the tile closing, and then they paid as well. So once that washed out, we just refunded them the payment they made online, basically.
So it has a story behind it. It just looked like it was a larger refund for...
It's usually not that big, but they have a high usage, a big bill, and then double paid it, basically, at the last second. So.
Right. Mike, on the consent agenda... Why don't we add the 2011 Ford Escape surplus approval into the consent agenda also? I think it was pretty straightforward on the memo.
Yeah, any questions on the Ford Escape? That's actually the car that Leo was driving up until his retirement, so we're just don't have any need for that at this point. So that's why we're putting that one up for bid.
Yeah. And then no purchase orders tonight, right, Steve?
And no purchase orders tonight that need board approval.
Okay. Well, if there are any other questions, we're ready, I think, for a motion to approve the register.
Motion to pass the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, that was unanimous. On to item four, Steve Anderson, the financial management update.
All right.
Steve, let me stop sharing so you can take over. Go for
it. Okay. We already did that. We did that. First, just want to kind of give you a verbal update on the audit. The numbers are pretty much completed, just finishing a couple last schedules. They will be going over to Dana at Osborne and whoever next week, and then we'll schedule a date for her to come up during March, and we'll have the report for you in May is usually, I think, when we do the audit presentation, and she comes up and or joins on Zoom, and we'll answer any questions we have. Can everybody see the executive summary okay?
No, not yet.
Okay, let me try that again. That better?
I think you're getting somewhere.
Yes,
yep, that's good.
All right. So January is obviously kind of a quiet month for us as far as revenue. We were slightly over budget. Expenses were, you know, pretty much what we predicted. There was a little typo that Tim helped me find, and then Scott helped me find, and so that this one on my screen may look a little different than the one in your packet. We didn't make $85 million in January. Just a little. So, I mean, we're doing all we can, but that's a little high for us to try to generate in 1 month. So apologize for that, and I've taken that word out of my template, so it won't happen next month. But yeah, so we're just running, you know, mid-80s, over $80,000 over, better than budget for January.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, so I noticed, and I feel like I asked about this when we were budgeting, but I noticed that we're even though we're within budget, we are like $200,000 over in expenses over last year. And there it seems like there was a reason for that, but I couldn't remember what it was.
I may have to look into that a little bit. I know we've added the regionalization fee right into our expenses, that $250,000.
Well, that might be, do it for sure.
That might be part of it. I mean,
do you want to just go? You want to just look into that, Steve, and get back with Karen on that?
Yeah, Karen, I'll contact you directly or send the whole board or give an update to you on what that difference is all made up of.
Okay.
All right. Cash, we continue to be in a strong position, 292 days of operating cash on hand. Our reserves are all what they need. You'll see the $16 million when you add all our accounts together that we hold, up slightly from the December month-end balance. We'll go over that in a little more detail when we go over the cash management report. Connections, we continue to have high connections through the COVID growth, I guess is maybe what we can start to call it. We had 10 connections in January, up from the five-year average of 5. The impact fees, most of those came in through Promontory, so that's why the dollar amount wasn't necessarily high. Also decreased impact fee when we do get those because of our last impact fee study. And Promontory sold 9 lots during January. The four-year average is 2. So I think Promontory is seeing the same growth that we're kind of seeing throughout the district. Lots of people wanting to move to Summit County. So we'll keep you updated on that. There are some rumors that Promontory has sold a whole lot again during February. So we'll let you know as soon as we get all those numbers in. Usage is interesting. We are above our four-year average for MRW customers by 12.6%. But lower than last year, where we hit a 107 acre feet last January. I think residential, large residential, commercials obviously down, kind of the impacts of probably not having as many skiers in town and not having Sundance can be seen in some of our usage numbers.
Steve, is that the first year that you're representing Community Water?
Last year we had some Community Water numbers, but not complete because we didn't have all their meters installed, so some people were just getting charged base.
Which is being 10% growth in and of itself.
Probably not an overall usage just because they're a low usage per unit type of customer. So even though it was 10% or slightly more increase to our customer base, it hasn't been a 10% increase in usage.
Okay.
Hey, Steve, do we talk to Mike Lourdes at all about the correlation between water flushes and usage of water? I mean, does that make sense?
I know there have been some conversations before. I haven't reached out to him about that recently, but yeah, there's usually a pretty good correlation between flushes and what
okay,
we see.
Thank you.
Yeah, especially this time of the year, right, when the usage is all inside. So,
yeah. Okay, thank you.
Receivables, our customers continue to pay and do a nice job. And whatever actions Anna and Lisa are taking to help encourage them. So our uncollected receivables dropped from over 100,000 to only 42,000 at the end of January. So yeah, no concerns. This is better than we trended historically. So this little gray line kind of at the bottom is just basically the difference of this. So you can see how it dropped during January. So lots of payments. So yeah, so that's really nice for us. This is our retail water sales. So you see the purple dot here. So our revenue was slightly lower this January than last January because of the decreased usage. It wasn't as significant as it might have been because we've added so much to our base. to our customers. So that's where we're starting. So we'll continue that graph for the year for you, so you can kind of, and Joel, this is kind of what I was, one of the things we talked about yesterday, how our revenue really spikes in the summer with the outdoor usage.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
You bet. And then just a quick snapshot of January, what we had budgeted as far as sales by residential, the different categories, where residential was a little better than budgeted. Everything else was pretty much really close to budget, except Park City was just a little bit under. But we'll see. For the budget for Park City this year, I just pretty much took it and divided it by 12. I didn't try to guess on when they'd use more, because it has been kind of inconsistent on, depends on what's going on with their plants and when they need water and when they don't. So
do we see that, has that fluctuated because of COVID, do you know?
Not too, I think it's more just Park City, how their plants coming along and snow making and when they don't make snow and what other sources they have. By the end of the year, it all kind of equals out. We get about $700,000 from this wheeling agreement, which is really more just a reimbursement of expenses because they own the Lost Canyon system in partnership with us.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Park City's usage in 2020 from Lost Canyon was very similar to what it was in 2019. So any COVID impacts that they experienced, we did not see in the water we provide them.
Yeah, and last year they had 2 months when they didn't take any water because of, I forgot what that was. And so that kind of changed things a little bit for us too, so.
Is UOP in the commercial there?
Yes, UOP is in the commercial there.
Steve, do you think the schools and government being down, do you think that's COVID related though?
You know, I was doing a little research for our drought thing, our drought contingency plan, which we'll be presenting on more. And it's interesting how little how much water the schools use inside. Their usage is about 10% inside and about 90% outside during the summer when they're watering all the big playgrounds and things like that, the lawns. So their usage, last January, I think they were still in school, right? And then in this January, they were pretty much in school, so I saw about the same usage. But yeah, their winter usage compared to their summer usage, it's night and day, to be honest with you, so.
So the amount they were down in January, that's just noise.
That's just noise, yeah.
Got it.
Sorry. Long answer to an easy question.
I love
okay.
That.
Let me just share the cash management report. So this is the semi-annual report to just let you know where we keep our funds, where the number on the executive summary comes from. So I think you probably see this every 6 months that Lisa would show you. So the $16 million roughly that we have, we keep the operating funds in Wells Fargo. The PTIS hold reserves for like a repair and replacements, all our operating reserves so we can make a little bit of cash. Then the $2.2 million is what we keep with Zions, is what they had at the end of the year to pay loans and because of our commitments there. So of that $16 million, basically $10 million, almost $11 million of that is our own checking reserves, our repair and replace reserves, so stuff that's pretty much at our own discretion to use how we need to. The other parts are made up of impact fees and stabilization funds that, you know, really are, we keep in place and are controlled on how we can spend those. But yeah, the cash position stayed strong. We've got the reserves on hand with the trust, with the bonds that we need to in preparation for payments. And then we still had some construction cash on the community water, the $276,000 at the end of the year. Drinking water basically forwards us enough to pay for maybe a quarter's worth of reimbursements, and then we draw it down on that. But we don't have very more drawdowns on that left as those projects are winding down. So any questions on, oh, and then the bottom part is just the detail. If you wanted to really look at each individual account, how much funds in each account. The Wells Fargo, you can see the general ledger balance, what the bank balance was, the difference, because we had outstanding checks and outstanding deposits, kind of your, how you would reconcile your own checking account kind of thing. And then these are...
There was a lot of entries in there where it was saying, as approved by the control board. Is that something that's approved at budgeting generally? Because I don't remember going through there and making all these motions and everything on these particular line items. Is this something that is globally taken care of during budget?
What it's more taken care of is, for example, when this fund was set up, it was set up under the direction of the control board to pay, I'm looking at the treatment plant, to pay for treatment plant needs.
Yeah.
So under the direction of the board is how it was set up, and so I think that's more what as the board, as approved by the control board, meant.
Yep, said another way, through policy, no. Right?
Well, I was going to say, we continually review those funds. So, for example, our treatment plant, we are always looking at how long the membranes are lasting, how long our carbon is lasting, and what that fund balance needs to be in order to support those every 4-year changeouts. So we haven't had to change that recently. It's the fund balance is at a good position. We just did some carbon and membranes recently, so we're kind of in a rebuilding position of that fund. But that would be something that we would come to you if we wanted to change the way that we're currently reserving for that fund.
And we do, in the budget process, Tim, you'll see when we go through kind of the cash, we talk about several of these funds and kind of what the minimum and maximum is to keep in those that have been set. For example, like the Lost Canyon Fund that Park City and us, we both put money into that. Once it hits $1 million, we don't have to put any more money into it because we figure we can cover any unforeseen expense down there or the needed repairs. And a few of the other funds. So in the budget, there is some discussion about where it sits, what's its maximum amount, and how much we put in each month.
I have just one final question on there, and this is kind of a projection on here. Is it, if we go to a drought reserve fund, how would that be represented in this table? Is it like bonded, or is it something where you scrape all the other reserves somehow and establish it?
I'm going to steal a little bit of Lisa's thunder. She may talk about this later.
Well, it could be in the April draft, right? It's coming out on how that gets done.
Yeah, I think it would be to answer your question, Tim, the line I would think would look very similar to the regionalization reserve, correct?
Yeah, and what we would do is probably even potentially take some of this money out of the regionalization reserve to start our drought contingency fund. But that would be under board approval, and you'd say, yeah, let's take $500,000 out of that and put it in a drought contingency fund, and then let's work on building that, you know, with excess revenue at this rate based on sales for the year.
Thanks.
You bet. Any other questions?
I have a couple of questions. Sort of a pain in the ass. Are we happy with our auditors? I'm not criticizing the auditors. Let me just say that. I'm just asking the question, are we happy with our auditors?
Are they
doing enough? And they're being negative, and I hate to say this, but they're being prudent.
We are very happy with the auditors, is probably the best way I can put it. They've done a really nice job. They've learned our organization. So now, you know, the first year is always a learning curve with the auditors.
Yeah, and,
but now it's a very smooth process. When we explain things to them, they understand. When they ask things from us, we know what they mean.
And Steve, do you want to just touch on
the relationship with them? And it's been really good. So
okay, thank you very much.
And Joel, as Steve mentioned, we recently changed auditing firms for a new set of eyes to make sure that prudence was being taken care of. So that's why we do change periodically.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for your time, everybody.
Just one more question. Oh. I feel like we've gone up so significantly between, you know, just over the past 3 years. And I guess I don't feel like, I'm wondering why we're adding another fund. I just feel like we've got a ton of reserves, and I'm not sure what kind of rainy day we're saving for at this point.
I think with respect to the drought reserve, Karen, I think that's a good point. I think it was to allocate, not necessarily to have another place to put rainy day money, but rather to reallocate some of our rainy day funds that we have into a drought specific fund that I guess has that specific purpose.
Sorry to ask another question. I know we have to be very, very careful what we invest in, but are we taking full advantage, in your opinion? I'm talking to Steve, Sigat, and Karen primarily, and anybody else who wants to chime in. But are we being prudent enough with our investments?
There are definitely some restrictions on us, what we can invest in. The PTIF, the Public Investment Trust Fund, is where we've always kept those funds. They definitely had a better return.
Okay.
Previously, right now we're going through with the whole bond and interest market. We're getting about a fifth of what we got last year, but there's just not a lot of options for us to probably go out and make a lot more money with the restrictions we have on not really being able to put that money at risk.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Karen, just to kind of talk a little further on your question, one thing, if you'd like us to consider this further, we could look at the regionalization reserve account. That was originally set up to help the district pay for regionalization fees that started last year. I believe that we've been paying those out of our operating expenses, right, Steve? So we haven't needed to go into that regionalization reserve account. So if we're not comfortable with the number of reserve accounts, one approach might be to, potentially eliminate the regionalization reserve account, allocate some funds into the drought contingency account, and, spread some of the other funds around, if you will, is an approach.
One other thought is that regionalization reserve has been building quite rapidly because we take 30% of the money we make from the Weber Basin Regionalization Agreement and put it in that fund. So this is our last year of big revenue from that, so we won't be able to build that as quickly as we've built it this last couple of years. And that, something somebody said brought up, part of the reason I just remembered why January expenses are higher this year than last year is we actually paid our insurance this year in January versus last year we paid it in February. So that's a $70,000+ hit there. But I'll do some more research so we can know exactly what.
The other thing that happened, Steve, there were 3 payrolls in January.
Okay.
So you had an extra payroll expense hit January this year versus last year.
It's great being part of a good team, isn't it, folks?
I know. That's why I'm so glad Lisa's where she is.
Thanks, everybody.
I was just going to chime in, too, about the reserve. Like Steve mentioned, we can do something different if we feel like 30% is maybe too much in that regionalization reserve fund. Those were funds that were set aside to help prepay debt, which we can do in 2024. With our 2014 bond. The other thing to consider is when we were starting to work on this drought contingency plan, and as we're looking at numbers, if we had to come up with a 20% decrease, and that's just kind of Weber Basin's first real hit to us, we're talking $1 million we could see lost in revenue. So it's that reserve.
Okay.
That's the regionalization reserve in half. So I know it looks like we're sitting on a lot of money, but if we were to come into a situation where we had to cut 20%, it's $1 million. And So we wanted to make sure we're in a position that we can weather that storm, and we're not asking our customers to do it immediately out of pocket. So that's and we'll talk about that more as we start to get into the drought reserve plan with you in the next couple months.
Okay.
Right. Anything else? All right. Turn it back over to you, Scott.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I'll turn it over to Lisa. Agenda item 5, I believe, right, Mike?
Yep. Looks like we've got approval of the COVID leave policy that we spoke about last month, and a new job position for a backflow administrator.
Can you see this memo here?
Yes.
Okay. So this is just a formal, you know, kind of a policy thing. We talked about this COVID-19 sick leave policy, and last month you recommended you made a recommendation to have the county council approve this. Subsequent to the meeting, the Summit County Council adopted a policy that special service districts could adopt their administrative control boards, could adopt their own policies relating to COVID. So this is just a formality. There have been no changes to this policy since you recommended it last month. We're just asking for your approval now that Summit County has made that policy in order to allow administrative control boards to approve COVID policies.
Okay. So are there any questions about related to the approval of our amended sick leave policy?
Yeah.
I think we worked through those last meeting.
Yeah.
Are we ready for a motion?
Sure. Motion to approve the district's amended COVID-19 leave policy.
Okay. Thank you. Second.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, that was unanimous.
Okay. The second item I have here is a job description for backflow administrator. And this is Stacy Blomquist, who presented at the last board meeting for our backflow presentation. And her job description, her job description has been an operator 3, kind of lumped in with our water operator, kind of roles and responsibilities. And is that, her position has expanded with the backflow program expanding. So we wanted to better define her roles and responsibilities. Also, like we talked about, this is becoming quite a large program. So we wanted to move this, her position, from a part-time position, which she has now. She works 25 hours a week. She would go to a full 40 hour a week. We've kind of documented in here just really just the things she's already doing. We just wanted to formalize it in her job description to more accurately reflect what she's doing. She does all of our handles the whole regulatory side for our backflow program, communicates with all of our customers. She does our education, really helps, you know, troubleshoot, respond to any customer requests. And we've also asked her as part of this, which she also does right now, she helps back up our public service department. So if Anna or Jackie need to go on vacation or have sick, Stacy's there to kind of help support that team as well. And she's great answering phones and talking to customers. She has tons of history with the district. And she's also expressed an interest in maybe helping out with the district's water quality program. So we've added a little bit of a role here that she may help us out with that.
Okay.
So does anybody have any questions about that position? We will, we're not changing her as far as finances go. She'll remain part-time until the end of the year. And when we go through our 2022 budget, this job will then be included as a full-time rather than part-time.
Something you use sooner, though? I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of advantages to moving her to full-time. Is that something you maybe like to see happen, yeah, before the end of the year?
I think we both like to do full-time, but I think Stacy also would like to wait a little bit longer until she goes full-time. So I think right now we're okay with the part-time, and it works for our budget, and I think it also works for her in her personal life. So we've kind of set that 2020 date, January 1st, as our target. She's awesome, and we're so glad to have her, and we're glad that she's willing to move to that full-time role so to help us administer this program because it's getting large.
Yeah. Hey, I have a question for you all. What if she's asked to do something that's not on this job description? I mean, does that ever happen? Am I making too much out of this?
Joel, small tasks, I have the authority to redirect manpower where needed. We're working through this right now. If it's a temporary assignment where the job description or job role significantly changes for a temporary period, we've got policies that help us work through those situations.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I don't want her or whoever. I don't want the position saying that, well, it's not my job decision, I'm not going to do it. And I may be all washed up, I may be full of hooey, but I'm still asking the question.
Yeah, so I think in those cases, Joel, like I said, as you know, management has the authority to redirect as needed.
Okay, thank you very much.
Scott, in my former life, we called these tailored descriptions to an individual. And the measure that we have to use is if, for whatever reason, if she quit tomorrow after she took this job, would you be able to find somebody else with this tailored?
That's a good question, Tim. I think, My quick thoughts are on a lot of the descriptive items here are broad enough, you know, compliance related things like that, that I think it would be relevant beyond just an individual person. So my quick thought is this is a specialty or a specialized position. The pool would be small to draw from, but I do believe there would be candidates out there.
I'm just cautioning that when you do tailored job descriptions to somebody that you know, that you'll find that, and I'm not saying that she's looking to quit, this is probably an opportunity, you find that you've narrowed it down so much that you'll have to change the job description just to go out and advertise again.
I understand your concern, Tim. It's a good comment.
Will we have to advertise this position in January?
That's a good question. In this case, Lisa, do you know the answer to that? I haven't worked through a part-time to full-time transition before, if that needs to be advertised or not.
As a general manager, you can make hiring. I mean, you have the authority to allocate resources as you see fit. So as we're working through our job descriptions and making sure our job descriptions describe the roles and responsibilities that different employees are playing, I think we're putting her into this. This is really just a cleanup, really, of what her job description is, because Operator 3 doesn't properly describe it.
Yeah, I'd say we're not creating a new position here, right? We're not opening, we're not creating an opening or opening a new position. This is strictly a transition from part-time to full-time and a job description which matches the work that's being performed.
Yep. And we can have further discussions during the budget regarding it moving to the full time. But I think this is more of a cleaning up rather than a new position opening up.
And that's kind of, did Dave Warnock, is he with the county?
Yep, he took Brian Bellamy's place. So he has reviewed the position and we've communicated with him our intentions. And he didn't have any comments on the job description and is aware of what we're doing.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so Lisa, do you need us to take action on this, or is it just for the board's information?
Yeah, I need a motion to approve.
Is there any are there any further questions or any more discussion needed? Okay, it sounds like we're ready for that motion, please.
Yeah, motion to approve the backflow administrator job description as presented and discussed.
Second.
That's Joel on the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Miss. Looks like we're ready to go to then item six, Lisa.
Yeah, this would be a consideration for recommendation to the Summit County Council for approval of updates to our administrative control policy or administrative policies. So, bring up this memo here. Oops. The end of last, really, the majority of these updates come from the risk assessment that we performed at the district the end of in Q4 of 2020, the end of last year. The substantive changes I've talked about here, really adding that section 11, which is reporting and basically guidelines on how to report fraud and abuse at the district. We found the administrative policies to be the best document to include these types of changes. Dave Thomas and Jamie Bracken have both reviewed the language on for the fraud and abuse and reporting, and they had no changes, so they were good with the language as it stands. I'll go to that section really quick here and just walk through it briefly. Okay, so this largely comes from a policy that the state auditor put out to help special service districts and others formalize a policy. So I've taken some language from their policy, also some of the policy that Summit County has in place, and kind of come up with what just more formalized the process someone would go through if they were to report fraud and abuse. Give some definitions of what fraud and abuse can be, and that this really applies not only to our employees, but if a citizen sees fraud and abuse happening, a vendor, anybody, a contractor, they could use the same reporting process. You know, initially we would have an employee who notices something, report to their supervisor. We have a form that I've included in this document that helps them answer some questions and see where the fraud and abuse may be happening. That would then go to the general manager, and an investigation, if it's determined that an investigation needs to be performed, that happens within 10 days, and then a formal investigation would need to be completed within 30 days. If the employee feels uncomfortable going to the general manager, he could go directly, or she could go directly to the administrative control board. We've allowed for that. We've also allowed, if someone wants to report anonymously, they can do so through Summit County's email, telephone, or in writing, and we've given instruction here. the county is happy to work with us and kind of leverage resources through the auditor's office to help provide provide another way for someone to report abuse. And also, I also discuss not only, you know, they can do this anonymously. It talks about anonymously isn't always the easiest route to go because it's hard to do the investigation when we're doing things anonymously, but it's certainly an option. And we also describe in this policy that there are whistleblower protections should an employee feel like there won't be any repercussions from them speaking up. So we document all that here. I think I included behind here the form for reporting. Does anybody have any questions or any changes they'd like to see?
I had two minor questions. Appendix A, is it still going to be part of the document?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. I left that out on this one.
I just assumed it was for brevity, Lisa, just omitting those pages, but we'll make sure that those go on to the county council.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then at the front end, go ahead, Tim.
Well, the form down there is, I'm just not familiar with that word. So is it a complainant or is it a complainant?
A complainant.
I think there's a T missing there somewhere.
I looked this up too, and it is. I think we say complainant, but it's really complainant.
Okay.
Hey, Lisa, on that first line about the asked if they'd like to remain anonymous, would it help give them that auditor hotline and that information there in 11.4? C, because they may not have the policy.
Yep. Just add that to the form, you're saying?
Yeah.
I can do that.
They may also need to know if they do remain anonymous, that the complaint may be declined.
And I think, on this form?
Yeah, just to encourage them to, I don't know.
We could add that or even, add to the form the anonymous and put a little asterisk that says something, reporting anonymously, some language from the top part. If reported anonymously, it could be declined.
Yeah.
And that they'll get whistleblower protections.
Yes.
You could add that in there, yep. Kind of reassure them as much as possible that, like, hey, this is fine. Yeah.
Okay. I can do that. Any other changes you'd like to see?
I had a minor question about the front end and the descriptions. Specifically that we remove the CFO reporting to the general manager.
Oh.
Because they report to, well, Steve reports to you, right, Lisa?
Yeah.
So that was that.
Yeah, so that was a cleanup. Steve was the accounting manager. We've now removed that position and we have an accountant. So there was some cleanup on the titles. And then when we approved the new org chart, I'm not sure if we approved. I think the county approved it. I thought we talked about it end of last year.
I was just wondering, since we've got the detail of like who reports to the GM, do we need more detail about where other people report? Because it's unclear on the front end then who the CFO reports to. We know it, but.
We could say,
This is super minor. I mean, if just think about it. If you want to put that level of detail in there where it highlights a little bit more of the org structure, I would support it. But, just highlighting that.
Yeah, I thought a little bit about this too, Ian, and I don't even know how relevant this reporting structure is to the document. I mean, we can glance at it again, and consider that, but I think instead of going to another layer of detail, I'd almost go the other way.
And that's, I guess, why I was bringing it up. I mean, this is a good opportunity to potentially, do we need to specifically state who is reporting to the general manager, since that's in the org structure that the county's already approved and the board's approved?
Yeah, I mean, we could just delete all 1 through 5 out of that, that sub detail there, and just leave it as senior management positions reporting directly to the general manager.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I've got a question for you, General. Maybe Lisa might...
Go for it, Tim. Hey, Tim, I'm worried we may have lost you.
Training session where you talk about what this new fraud thing is. How does it get communicated to the staff, and particularly like operations staff?
So we lost the front end of that, Tim, but I think that we understand your question. We do need to do some kind of training. Liz, I don't know if you had anything in mind there, but I think it makes sense to offer a training to bring folks up to speed that this reporting structure is available, and what it means and what it entails.
Yeah, and we generally do that when we put, it doesn't necessarily, it does, because we have the vehicle policy in here. So when we make some larger policy changes that affect the employees, generally it happens in the personnel policies, but we hold a meeting with them and sometimes it's on the front end if it may affect them more and get their input. In this situation, I think we would definitely hold a meeting as we've, kind of got your input and the council's input to go ahead with this and definitely make this a training tool to how to notice it, how to report it. And then these policies, not that everybody's going to get online and look at them, but we make all these policies available to our employees on that. We have an interweb that they can access. So if they want to refresh their memories or, look back at something. But I would envision holding an employee meeting to discuss this. It would be over Zoom after we get...
Is the training for the office staff pretty much the same as you'd have for operations?
For these kinds of policy changes, yes.
Okay.
We get together as a group generally. And then I guess just the one other thing, we already talked about it a bit earlier, but is we've also incorporated the drought reserve fund in language in the document as we were updating the administrative policies anyway. We wanted to go ahead and get that language in there as we'd like to present that to you when we do the drought drought contingency plan in the next couple months.
Right, I guess the other way we could maybe do that would be to have a drought rate. How would those two ideas work together?
Yeah, I think, Lisa, you had some good feedback from some training webinars that you went to, right, where if at all possible, the recommendation is for the utilities to absorb as much as they can. If it gets to a point where that can't be done, drought rates then begin to be applied. But Lisa, do you want to touch on your takeaways from those webinars?
Yeah, I think generally we should be planning for this. We know it's coming at some point. I put in my packet, the state that 75% of the state is an extreme or... And I forgot the one level above that, but we're not in a good situation. And before we started getting the snow a month ago, I was worried, as I think a lot of people were. you know, I hope the snow continues to come and we end up with a decent snowpack, but at some point it's not going to, and we're going to end up in a situation where we're going to have to reduce. So, and this has happened obviously in California and Arizona, and they've gone through these things before. So their recommendation was you should be planning for this, and you should have some kind of reserve established. And, you know, we definitely are having these more extreme weather patterns where we have a really hot, hot, dry summer. And then the next year we have, you know, a really wet, rainy spring, and maybe even an early fall. So maybe in those years when we have those larger revenue generators, because we've had a really hot, dry summer, we take some of those revenues that fell outside of what our normal, you know, budget revenue number was, and we put it into this drought reserve fund. Because, like I said, we can swing $1 million, and it seems, you know, like, well, you have, you know, but $1 million, it'll happen fast. And so we want to be able to kind of absorb that. And that's just 1 year. So what happens if we have, you know, another year? Or we get into a situation where now we're cutting 60% and we're asking customers to do half as much watering outdoors. So I think initially we'd like to be able to build enough of a cushion that management and the board feels comfortable with, knowing what we could get into as far, you know, as, you know, $1 million, $2 million potentially if we got, you know, into something further than that first year of cuts. And then from there, we've been looking at really trying to affect the tiers potentially. So people who are not just using a normal amount of water, you know, your 5,000 to 10,000 gallons, which would be a normal indoor use, but we really do have an easy way to identify what's indoor and outdoor because we're so seasonal. So we can see what's irrigation water and we can see what's not. So we would start to maybe affect those higher tiers more to try to recover some revenue for those super users that want to continue to water their lawns and not listen to the restrictions that we're placing on them. So those are the things we're considering right now as we're working through this drought plan. And we'll be presenting those ideas to you.
Yeah. Lisa, is it a policy that you were going to address the drought reserve fund? And I don't know if we're kind of getting out of order on here, but is there a definition of the...
Tim, we lost you.
We could always pass on over time the cost to ratepayers. So this has got to be some sort of a short-term thing where people are using less water because we're asking them to use less water. The revenues go down, and this is closing the gap between planned revenues and what we're actually getting to cover expenses within the district. So is there some definition of what the reserve is supposed to be targeted toward?
I missed the first half of your question, so I just...
In the definition of the drought reserve fund, if you have it in the policy right now, is it being used solely to cover the gap between planned revenue and actual revenue resulting from lower usage because we're telling the customers to use less or whatever, and we're not getting the revenue in, but we still have costs, like the Weber Basin or whatnot.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you go to that language right there? And
the drought reserve fund language?
Yeah, please. In 2.4i? Yeah. You make that a little bigger?
Yeah, because our cost of water from Weber Basin isn't going to go up because of drought, correct?
No.
It's going to, our revenue is going to go down because our users will be using less at our request.
Yep.
Right. So this would be the fund that would help bridge that gap that you said. So our revenues are going to come down. Our expenses are going to remain largely fixed. Our debt payments aren't going down. I mean, we still have to meet our debt requirements. And we still have capital projects that are going to be needed. So this is that gap so that we don't have to, you know, that we have a cushion for when we do ask customers to start.
It's going to cover the gap until we can pass any long-term trends on to ratepayers.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And Mike, getting back to your earlier question about, you know, drought rates and is that maybe a more appropriate way to go? I rather like this concept of years where it's hot and dry, revenues are high, they're more than what was budgeted. Budgeted revenues should cover our capital facility plans. Revenues that are higher than what's budgeted, I think it makes sense to go into a drought reserve fund and create effectively a smoothing function for those following years that there could very well be impacts, right? It may not be that first dry year that, you know, where the revenue is coming in, but we, you know, to reserve that money to bridge maybe the following year or the subsequent years, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Right, we're asking the ratepayers to fund a rainy day account for themselves, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're not raising rates to create that, right? What we're doing is we're taking, you know, what would be an abnormally high usage year due to weather that will lead to a drought condition. We're essentially taking that, the revenue that we brought in during that year and holding it for them effectively to be able to bridge a gap in, say, the subsequent year and not have to raise rates and not have to charge them a drought rate, you know, essentially.
Right. Is this an insurable event, or is there no product out there that you can use insurance in lieu of a drought reserve fund, or even is there any drought hedge funds out there?
I've never thought of that.
I have no idea. Do you know, Steve?
Like, we're just sort of self-insured.
No, I was going to say the same thing. No idea.
I can't imagine being an extreme drought makes us a good, you know, insurable candidate, though.
We have a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
what everybody does that lives in a floodplain.
what about putting language in here that says this doesn't preclude, implementing a drought rate?
Yeah, I'm with Mike on that. I really think we need to have some kind of, there should be something that encourages people to conserve if we do all have to cut back on water.
This is Joel. Let me just say this. We in the Centerville Basin Planning Commission are very concerned about sustainability. And Scott and I talked about this yesterday, and I'm not sure if we talked to Steve or not, but I can guarantee you that if we get into a drought situation, we're going to become more of a pain in the ass than we normally are. I'm speaking of the Centerville Basin Planning Commission. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys, you know better than I do, that water is very, very important to us and very, very, very valuable to us. But just know that it's on our radar, and it's water is really important.
Karen and Mike, to your points about language here about conservation, I think the administrative policies is not the right place for that. I think, you know, the administrative policies setting up this account for funds is appropriate. If we want to get into drought rates and conservation and enforcement and things like that, the rules and regulations are the better place for that. Which we cover some of that material, but we can review that, I think, as part of this drought response or drought contingency planning that we're working through as staff. We recognize that we're going to have to make rules and regulation amendments to support it.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. And then just make get it all fit together, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do we have any more discussion on the updates to the administrative policies?
I just add one more piece that even with our snowpack increasing, I'm still very apprehensive about this next year. I know I've brought this up before, but we are at historic lows never before seen for soil moisture, and that directly correlates with the runoff predictions that are being forecast for this spring, and they're not great. Even with the snowpack increases we've had in the last month, we're still looking at very poor recharge rates to our surface water system. So I'm extremely appreciative of the efforts that you guys are doing to be proactive on this front. So thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve the updates to our administrative policies?
Sure. Motion for recommendation from the Administrative Control Board to Summit County Council for approval of the updates to the district's administrative policies per discussions held in the board meeting.
Second.
Okay, that's Ian and Joel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Well, thank you, Lisa. Looks like you guys put a lot of effort into that.
Yeah, good dialogue, too. Thanks to the board on that.
Yeah. Item 7, general manager comments. Scott?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Just kicking it off with an update on the spring. As you recall from our last board meeting, we experienced a deterioration in our source water quality in the spring, which is there in the lower Sun Peak area. And thankfully, there was never any public health risk. Mountain Regional disinfects that source. So safe drinking water was, continued to be provided. We did have to notice our customer base that we did have a positive bacteriological sample on that source. We had very little public response to that notice. It seemed as though the public who read it, understood the condition and that drinking water remained safe. So at this point, the spring is currently off, if you will. We're not using the spring in our distribution system. And the Division of Drinking Water is currently investigating it to determine if, in fact, it's under the influence of surface water, which would have caused this positive bacteriological sample. Per rule, if Mountain Regional is able to meet some enhanced disinfection requirements, which includes what they call a 3-log removal of Giardia and a 4-log removal of viruses, we can reinitiate using this source in the near term. Sam and the operations team are working diligently to design and implement these enhancements to our disinfection system on the spring to be able to use it for this peak season coming up for this summer. Pending the division's determination, which may not occur until the spring of 2022, they have a scheduled microbial analysis test they plan to do this spring. Depending upon the results of that, they may request one in the spring of 2022 before making their final determination. But pending that determination, if they do in fact say that the spring is under the influence of surface water, we will have to move forward with an additional treatment step. We will have to filter that water, which effectively means we will have to construct or make use of a surface water treatment plant to be able to continue to use that source. So we've been very busy over the last month, not only working on these near-term improvements to be able to use that source this summer, as it is a very important source for the community, really, but also looking at those long-term options. You know, what options do we have with respect to treatment? There's a couple There's a couple obvious ones. One is to add treatment capability at the site. I believe that we've got an uphill battle with respect to property rights on that site to be able to do so. Another option is to let that water run downstream and treat it at the East Canyon Water Treatment Plant. That's the water treatment plant the Weber Basin owns, which took over or began owning, if you will, at the time the master agreement was signed. So that's an opportunity that we're looking at, looking at the pros and cons there. Con being, we got to make sure the water's there at the end of the line, right, to be able to treat it. A pro is that that facility's already built. It would require replacement of a lot of hardware in the facility because it's never been used, and we know that it would need to be replaced. But, Weber Basin is investigating what those costs might be currently. And another bonus is that Weber Basin would operate that facility. If we take the treatment design and construction under our purview, we will be working directly with Summit Water on that operating relationship and how we work through that. The spring is a shared source with Mountain Regional and Summit Water. So that's the high-level update at the moment. Like I said, actively working on both these near-term and long-term solutions. The long-term solution at this point is a bit of a moving target because we don't yet have a letter which states that we need to meet those treatment requirements. So at this point, it's do as much legwork as we can here at the front end so that when that letter is received, we expect an 18-month timeline from the receipt of that letter to the deadline to have that treatment process up and running if we do want to use the source. So additionally, we are working on some contingencies with respect to source capacity in the district. Thankfully, our delivery to Summit Water drops fairly significantly next year. So that would create a potential buffer. And in fact, we're not able to use the spring next year. Another contingency, we met with Jacobs Engineering today, who's our engineering service provider who provides our treatment consulting. We're looking at a fairly near-term move to add an additional treatment skid up at our treatment plant to add some additional redundancy for the district. So a lot going on. That's the update for now, and I'll take any questions on that any board members have.
That's kind of a tough problem because it's only about, 200 gallons a minute? You can't hardly build a treatment plant that small.
It fluctuates from about, 5,000 gallons a minute down to about 150.
Yeah, that's a big span.
Yep, you're absolutely right, Mike.
Is this something where the board could provide direction? Is that in our responsibility to say let's just move forward and assume we're going to have to treat this, or is this just more of a update?
Yeah, this is just an update. I'm not looking for any direction per se. If you have specific recommendations that you don't feel like we're touching on, by all means, let us know. So I think until I come to you and say that I'm asking for approval to move forward on one item or another, I think for now it's just an update.
Okay. God, is this unprecedented in your knowledge of the district? Is this the first time this has happened?
With respect to this source?
No, any source.
Well, we have two other wells that are under the influence of surface water that can't be used in our distribution system that are on East Canyon Creek, Tim. So this phenomenon certainly is not unprecedented. Having what was previously a good drinking water source and then having this this challenge come up. It's unprecedented in my time here at the district. I'd have to ask Brian. Brian, I don't know if you have any comment on that on the early days.
Yes, it's unprecedented. You know, we kind of know the reason why the spring was, you know, under the influence. It's pretty much the development in the canyon. So, you know, I would say if the development would have happened or they could have had some sort of a protection zone, we probably wouldn't be in this situation.
But is it the development?
I was headed. It's like this isn't going to go away.
Rock excavation?
I think, can you say that again, Tim? You are, Mike and you were talking at the same time. Was your question, was it the result of rock excavation?
Yeah, they excavated a lot of rock and put some foundations in for those new townhouse units that were coming pretty close to the well there. Is that when that started?
I mean, when did you start seeing... Go for it, Brian.
I was going to say, we've documented some advanced, you know, mud events that came down the spring. One was during the construction of the golf course, and another mud event was when they were building the Apex condos up there on the ski hill.
I'll say generally this situation is fairly common in spring sources. Sam, I don't know if you want to make comment on this, but springs come under the influence of surface water. That situation happens, fairly regularly, I think, across the state.
Yeah, I'd just add, you know, my time working at the Division of Drinking Water, it's a very common thing to happen with spring sources. And, overall, maybe, treating this water will provide a, you know, a long-term benefit, increase in water quality for the district. So.
You know, I'm hopeful that there's a silver lining in all this for the district. The district did not fully utilize its allocation of the spring as a result of just operational challenges with getting that water into our system and the times of the year where it produces a lot of water. We couldn't get it out of the zone it was needed in, and there wasn't enough demand to fully utilize it. So, through treatment and through an ability to get that water into other zones, I think the district has an opportunity to actually get more out of this source than we ever have before, both with the utilization of unused water rights in the East Canyon drainage, as well as in capacity potentially for the system. To Mike's point, the flows fluctuate significantly, and they fluctuate even year to year for a given month, right? Last summer, the spring produced very well. Flows much, much higher than that 150 gallons a minute, Mike, that I mentioned. And then there's years where it's quite low. So, that's a challenge of springs, and it will be a challenge in the design of a treatment plant if that's the direction we go. Any other comments on that?
Scott, have you seen higher flows since the golf course went in the summer?
Brian would have to answer that. Brian knows more about spring flows than anybody at the district.
No, we have not seen any higher flows since that was built.
Okay. Thanks.
You know, the other option is that we just we don't use it anymore. Right? Which, what does that mean? That means that we're performing source development sooner, right? We're expending capital money on, you know, enhancements to the treatment plant and other source development projects sooner than we had expected. And that's another option.
And if we didn't use the source, then we just let it run. Is that something where we could have some bargaining power with Trout Unlimited or somebody for putting water into the creek?
We could, you know, I think it's going to be peanuts in the grand scheme of things, but yes, we could. You know, I've been working closely with the water banking group on this very topic, and they are interested in setting up what they call a statutory bank for the East Canyon Creek, where environmental groups such as Trout Unlimited and others would be interested in leasing in stream flow so effectively they would pay water providers or other diverters to leave that water in the creek.
Yeah. Can it be sold to the golf course as untreated source by, like, just to, it just seems like it's really expensive to, like, ship it all the way to the treatment plant and then back.
Yeah, so good idea, Karen. You know, could it be sold to another diverter potentially? It has a ton of value. We have a lot of water rights that we can lay over this source. With respect to cost to go to the treatment plant, we would let it naturally flow to the treatment plant. I think where there's some cost savings at the existing plant is that there's no land purchase. It is an existing structure. All of the distribution infrastructure exists and is part of the master agreement. So Weber Basin not only owns the plant, they own 50% of the what's called the Highway 40 system, which would allow that water to be moved after it's treated, to be moved into effectively the regionalization system, right? And move through the interconnects that we're all paying for today to be built, to be able to get that water back to us. So there would be very little, if any, additional distribution infrastructure that would need to go in. It's just strictly, adding the filters and the treatment capability within the facility, to get it up and running.
Okay.
So that's one of the benefits. I think the biggest risk and the biggest challenge is we got to make sure the water's there at the other end, right? If we let it all flow downstream. So we're working on that. We're looking at opportunities to measure the flows in the creek and identify, you know, is this water really making it to where it needs to go?
Okay, that's a good update. How's Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company?
Good. Quick update there. I received an email. I've been in fairly close contact with Eric Sivlik, who runs Pine Meadows. His most recent update was he presented, to the board of the water company and to the HOA board for the residents up in Pine Meadows. Presented the situation, that he was, you know, effectively that they were going to move towards annexation with Mountain Regional. And it sounds like that was, fairly well received. I think the folks there recognize that, that's the best option at this point and are supportive of that move. So, Eric's position to me, and it sounds like it's consistent amongst his, the folks that he's communicating with, that let's get this done sooner rather than later. I don't think they want to wait 5 years to pull the trigger on this. So I'm working with Dave Thomas currently to identify what that process will look like for them. We're going to get that list of steps. I'm hoping to get that list of steps over to Eric tomorrow. And that will give him an idea and give the folks that he's communicating with an idea of what needs to be done prior to really getting serious about the annexation. So, stay tuned. That's really the update. Working closely with him, working closely with Dave, I guess so far so good.
Okay.
Any questions on that? Hearing none, we can move on to 7C, district goals and key activities for 2021. In your packet, I included essentially a bulletized summary of the key activities in each department. I tried to color code those to identify those things that the board can expect us to bring to you for presentations the materials you can expect to see in your packet, and then the materials or the activities that are just internal activities for us as staff. Really, that's just an update for the board. I'm not going to go through that in detail. If you have specific questions, I'm happy to answer them. But otherwise, it's just a status for you to understand what it is that we're working on.
Looks like a good plan.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Moving on then into other, there's a few topics that have kind of cropped up, either through board questions or, current events type topics that we wanted to mention. First off, Chris, if you don't mind, can you provide an update on, kind of overview and update on the cyber attack or the hacking incident on the Florida's, the water treatment plant in Florida and mitigating measures that you're working on for us internally?
Sure. I believe most of you probably have heard about this, and I'm not sure how in depth you've followed it, but just to allay fears, this was not, they don't believe it was any kind of foreign attack, sort of a thing. Basically, it was somebody gained access through the TeamViewer software that was installed on a computer within the treatment plant inside of the Florida facility. An operator had seen somebody get onto the computer earlier in the day, move the mouse around. Then later on in the day, about 5 hours later, another incident happened where the operator watched somebody come in and change a set point on the SCADA system for the treatment plant and changed a set point from 100 parts, I think it was 100 parts per million for lye up to 1100 parts per million. As soon as the intruder left, the operator set the set point right back down to where it should have been. And, there was no harm. Nothing had happened. It hadn't been long enough for the pumps to actually affect anything. But it's, sort of a wake up call for some people. So this wasn't, your typical attack scenario, right? Somebody didn't hack in. They just used a piece of existing software to gain access to another computer. Relating to our system, from our SCADA client, so while the SCADA client can be open on multiple instances of different machines, you need to have credentials to log into that software to be able to make any changes. And it times out within 5 minutes and locks you out. You can look at things, but you can't make any adjustments. Unless you have the correct credentials to log into it. So even if somebody were to be able to gain access to our computers, which none of the operators have the authority to be able to install software onto the main computers that the guys use at the plants and so forth, if somebody were to be able to gain access to that, they still have another layer beyond that that would, impede them from being able to recreate this scenario on our system. We also are implementing for the remote access to our computers, a two-factor authentication, and we're making everybody also change all their passwords in the next week or so. You guys have any questions on any of that?
That's fantastic work.
Yeah, most of the stuff is, has been in place for a long time. It's not, we're changing the passwords. It's just a good reminder that we, need to change them on a more regular basis. But the backbone for all this stuff has sort of always been there. And we have firewalls both at the treatment plant and at the office. And the SCADA system is segregated from an IP standpoint from everything else. So even if you're on the, say, one of the computers in the office that that the operators use, it's not physically connected to the same network, same IP addresses as everything else. So that was something we did, probably 3 or 4 years ago, where we literally segregated everything out. I get notifications when anybody tries to log into any of the routers or gain access to the routers through, unusual channels. And I think in the last 4 years, I think I've probably had a total of 4 notifications of that. So it's a pretty minimal, personally, I perceive this as a pretty minimal threat to us.
Thanks, Chris. Go ahead, Tim.
Do they talk about this sort of thing, about cyber protection of the water systems pretty routinely? Is this a professional industry concern?
Definitely. And it actually, it's a concern more, not just from a water standpoint, but from a control system standpoint. I see bulletins all the time for hardware for control systems. And that tends to be the weakest link where a PLC, or some other device is, I'll call it outward facing, where people can see that device from the internet outside of a network. And that's where most of the concern is from. People being able to manipulate it that way. But all of our communications between remote sites and our stuff is all encrypted. All the stuff that comes over cellular network is all on a private network that is not outward facing. You can't see it from beyond one particular machine within our network.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Yep.
Any other questions for Chris? Hearing none, we'll move on. Another topic we wanted to touch on that came up in our staff meeting this morning was just touching on the Texas water challenges that are going on. What I understand of that situation is that it was largely caused by construction practices that, water pipes that weren't expected to see freezing temperatures. So we obviously live in a place where we protect against cold weather. So whether it be buried depths of our water mains or, in-home plumbing, takes those considerations in that it could see freezing temperatures. So I don't really see any risk or impact to us that's similar to what the folks in Texas are experiencing. I think it's just construction practices that really weren't, don't stand up to cold weather. So I don't know if anybody has any specific questions on that or concerns.
What is our Texas scenario here? Is it like a week of 110 degree weather?
Good question. So,
would Texas here be a fire in the Uintas if we lose our surface water when the mudslides come down?
As far as just like a widespread disruption, basically, to our ability to provide, is that where you're going with that?
My point is that I think that in Texas it would probably be
lost your audio again, Tim.
For us, I think that we would have a situation where we might have a weather event that could be extreme high temperatures for an extended period of time, and what might be the effect on us with extreme high temperatures that we don't anticipate at 7,000 feet in the mountains?
I see what you mean. That's a good question, right? Maybe one thought that comes to mind is, do we have overheating of motors and pump stations, right, or things to that effect?
Yeah, right. They can't be mitigated because it gets mitigated with air somehow, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just think about that, because I don't think the people in Texas were particularly, I don't know if you could call them negligent or anything like that. There's all kinds of politics behind that, but why build your system for sub-zero temperatures when you're in Texas?
Yeah. But Tim, that's a good point to think about. Think about the alternative for us. What's the environmental condition we don't expect to see, and what's the impact of that? Chris, that's probably worthy of a follow up with you and I and others to maybe sit down and think about. All right, moving on then. Just a reminder, I'm following up on Mike's reminder from last board meeting that the Open Meetings Act training is was held earlier in February, and it is online and available to all board members, and it needs to be viewed by the end of the month, which is Sunday. I sent a link out just before the meeting this evening to access that, you know, that recorded training that Margaret has typically done in the past. I have not watched it yet, so I'm not sure who did it this year, but it should be in your inboxes and easy to access, and typically takes, oh, I don't know what, 20 or 30 minutes or so to sit down and watch it. So if you could please take care of that, that'd be great. And then the last item that I have is I spoke with Mike earlier today, and he requested an opportunity to discuss board positions and kind of poll the group. So, Mike, do you want to take it from there?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Yeah, so next meeting in March is our election of officers. And, you know, I was thinking about losing Bob and kind of how, you know, he would have transitioned into the chair position. And, you know, if there's anybody else interested in doing that, I want to, you know, put that opportunity out to anybody that's interested and wanted to, you know, have a discussion of, you know, sort of the succession planning for the board. You know, I'm willing to serve, you know, another term. I enjoy it. But, you know, at some point, you know, there's room for growth and movement. And, I wanted to, yeah, see what everybody else thought about that.
Any thoughts from board members about, you know, Mike either continuing to serve as chair or other board members that would like that opportunity? Any thoughts about a board member moving into the vice chair position with Bob leaving that role?
I've voiced this opinion previously, but I'm very appreciative of Mike's leadership in the chair role, and totally comfortable with him there. So, thanks, Mike.
Well, yeah, thank you, Ian.
I would be willing to consider vice chair, though. If you're looking for somebody to step up, I would love to learn at your heel, Mike.
Well, yeah, I think that's what we wanted to, you know, just so that next meeting we're, you know, kind of have some ideas of who's interested in.
Much longer.
And, okay, well, that's a good start. And I think we can all kind of think about it. And if you've got, you know, some thoughts, I think you can share them with Scott. And, you know, we could kind of prepare for next month.
Okay.
That's all I had there.
Okay, sounds great, Mike. Thanks. With that, that's it for me. If there's no other specific questions that you'd like me to address.
That was really nice, Scott. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Item 8, the legal. Did Dave make it in? Do we have any legal updates?
Dave did not show up tonight.
Okay. And I don't have anything that's legal, you know, I don't have any legal update either.
Yeah. All right. So, item 9, questions on the department update. Should we just go around the room, so to speak? And Karen, did you have any?
Well, I thought Lisa's report on the House bills that are possibly affecting Mountain Regional were really interesting.
That was good stuff.
Yeah, all three of them were you know, so I like that you're keeping track of that. And, you know, I certainly have feelings on all of these. And then just on the tech report, I was wondering how much it's going to cost to update all the hardware at Lost Canyon, and wondered if we knew that yet.
Are you talking, sorry, was that directed at me for the?
Yes,
that was a, there was a PO that Scott signed. I want to say it was 30 to 35,000, something like that.
30,720, I think. Yes.
Yeah, and that's including the hardware and the time from the integrator to help us get all that stuff taken care of.
Okay, great. That's all I had.
Joel, did you have any questions?
At this point in time, no, I don't have any questions. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
And Tim, what did you think of the updates?
I like Brian's picture.
The ditch witch. That's nice.
The guys are loving the new equipment.
Yeah. You gotta have one. All right.
It's a game changer.
And Ian, how about on your end?
I had a question for Lisa on her meeting with the assistant county manager, Jana Young. Was there anything that came out of that where Mountain Regional can help with the vaccine distribution?
We sent over to Jana a list, and I can't remember if I did that before or after, but we sent her a list of available departments. She has not reached out to us yet for any help with that. I think they did they are getting some assistance in other areas, I will say that. If Johnson & Johnson gets approved, which I think it's anticipated it will, then obviously there will be more vaccines, so I could see us maybe being called on in the next month or so.
And what capacity would we be helping out with?
We largely the department we have that has availability now is distribution, because we're in the winter, so it's a little quieter. So I kind of said, Scott and I decided, you know, we have maybe a body or two that could help with either if it's like set up in the movie, the film studio area, or, you know, moving things or helping get, you know, things torn down. Really largely that was the kind of crew that we could offer up to them.
That's commendable either way. So thank you for, starting that conversation. That's great.
Welcome. Oh, I guess one thing to add, I just got notification today. Our employees have been, the Summit County Health Department just authorized our employees to get vaccines. So we've been elevated to essential status, and our employees are, several today have started to receive emails from the CDC for the VAMS website to start registering. So that's good news.
Awesome. Cool. And then the only other thing I had was, really liked that photo, the Ditch Witch. Thanks, Brian. That's it, Scott.
All right, sounds good, Ian.
Mike.
Okay, do we have any other questions or any other business?
That's it for me, Mike.
The staff did a really nice job with all of this. Thank you. And we'll be adjourned at 7:44.